Hey, everybody. Welcome to an episode of Author Spotlight. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is author Lindo Forbes. Hi, Lindo.
Hey, y'all. How are you?
I always enjoy talking to you, and actually, I sent you over like the Zoom link, and I'm like, oh, here's our doc, and you're like, we need a doc.
Yeah, we don't need help.
We don't really need help. But I'm super excited to talk to you about your upcoming release. But before we do that, I'm going to give your bio for people that haven't had the chance to listen or hear you. Because you and I did a happy hour last year for the release of your first book.
Did. It was one of the happiest accidents of my life that we met. And now I can't imagine a world without Becky Burrier.
I mean, Lindo is my go-to lady, so I love it. Lindo Forbes lives in Toronto, where you can find her at her day job or procrastinating on social media, sometimes both simultaneously. She also been known to spend her free time working on her novels in progress, battling with the Libby app, only 30 holds at a time.
Nonsense.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. Think of the varied ways to corrupt her nieces and nephews, or searching the world's best street foods with her husband. Anyway, welcome to the podcast, Lindo.
Thank you.
Okay, I have to talk to you about Libby Holds real quick. So our local library announced that if you've had a hold for a year and you've delayed it twice, once it hits a year, it will go away and fall off your list.
But what if I'm not in the mood for that book yet?
That's just it. I don't think that our libraries are mood reader understanding.
No, they don't. That's not. I find that very disrespectful.
Discrimination against the mood reader.
Yeah, because when I am ready, I will change the time of the hold so that I will be like, all right, you can have it now. And then I will read it when the time is right. Right. But if it comes available before I'm ready, what am I supposed to do with it?
Right? Like, it really just feels like they're calling me out, too, for some of my shit.
I think it's personal, Becky. Yeah. I think it's personal, and you should probably do something about it.
But then I also noticed, because I have a Cleveland library, because in Ohio, if you have an Ohio ID, you can get, like, a Cleveland, you can get multiple library system cards with the way the state works. So, also, there's a big event at the Toledo Library in November.
Ooh,
like
nice.
A romance con at the Toledo Public Library. Freaking Toledo, Ohio? What?
Love it.
CM Nacosta's coming, Abby Jimenez, Julie Soto.
Wow.
Those are the headliners. And then there's a bunch of other authors coming in too.
Oh, those are not bad headliners.
Not at all. I'm like, yeah, hello.
Love it.
But anyway, so Cleveland started adapting that policy that you can only delay delivery three times and then it'll fall off your holds.
I don't like it.
I'm just like, why are you making rules like this? It's just...
No. Read the room, library.
Right? I don't know. I'm a little mad at them right now, but it's okay. Because there are some amazing audiobooks out right now that I am... been gobbling up from my local library, so
perfect.
I won't complain too much. Okay, so we are here to talk about The Indomitable Mr. Temple. This is book two in the Queen City Queen series.
Yes.
But before we get into it, we're going to talk a little bit about who Lindo Forbes is as an author.
Okay.
This is your sophomore release.
Sophomore release. My debut came out in December 5th, 2023. Because we're in 2024 right now, you guys. I am aware of that. That is not a surprise to me. That is information I already had.
No shocks there for you.
No, well, you're not shocked. My debut came out in December 2023. It was The Insufferable Mr. Fletcher. It was a workplace opposites attract contemporary romance. And we meet Lee, who is the hero of book two, The Indomitable Mr. Temple. The Indomitable Mr. Temple. We meet Lee there. She is a single mom and she owns a romance only bookstore and cafe. And I decided My writing style is very chaotic in that I only know what's happening once my dummies do it. I'd like to say that I'm a documentarian. I think of the idea, I know what the story is, but I need these two dum-dums to do the stuff, and then I write it down. So Lee and Quincy came very real to me as I was finishing up Junior and Davis's story. And it's such a different story because Junior and Davis were dealing with identity and Junior's inability to let herself be seen. Lee doesn't have that problem. Lee is the firstborn daughter and has done all of the firstborn daughter things. She's taken responsibility for everybody. She doesn't ask for help. She doesn't ask for help because she doesn't think anybody's going to come. And if she has to ask, then shouldn't she just do it herself anyway? And
Right. She is so stereotypical
first
oldest
daughter.
daughter. Yeah.
Yes, she is. I've tried to make her as archetypal as possible.
Yeah.
She loves her family and she's happy to help them, but she does definitely see it as her responsibility. And she's the kind of person who, if you call her to complain about something that happened, or, oh, I need the light for my car came on, I think I need to take it for an oil change, or, oh, the bank didn't, cash the check in time, and like, she will do something about it. She doesn't have the capacity to just sit back and listen because to her, what, why would you, like, let's just find a solution. There's a problem, let's solve it.
Yeah.
And so she spent the majority of her life, and Lee is 44 when the story starts. She spent all of her adult life just doing the very next thing that has to happen, this and then this and then this and then this, methodically through her whole life. In walks Quincy, handsome, younger, a little bit of a himbo, just a little,
He
a
is
teeny bit.
so swoony and such
Like,
a flirt.
yes, flirty, slick
Charisma,
talker,
charisma.
so much charisma. So when he shows up and says, "Hey, would you like to take a walk on the wild side with me?" Her immediate answer is, "Absolutely not. I don't even have a wild side. That is not a thing that I'm going to do. I don't have time for your nonsense, sir. Please keep going." It takes her a really long time to recognize that wanting something, the first step into getting it is admitting that you want it at all, right? Like, that's the very first step. And for her to admit that she wants something means that she has to admit that all the other things that she's done might not have been in her own best interest. And that's a hard pill to swallow. So really, Quincy and Lee are so much different than Junior and Davis because Junior and Davis understood each other and they believed in the same thing. They just disagreed about how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Quincy and Lee, their problem is that Quincy doesn't see any problem with asking for what he wants at all times, anytime, at any time of the day or night. I should ask for what I want because how else will someone know that that's what I want if I don't tell them? And Lee does not ask for what she wants because what if somebody doesn't give it to me? And then now what?
It was so fascinating to read these two, to read Quincy and Lee, and how their tension is so different than the tension in your first book. In the first book, it was tension of competition and, that close proximity of working together and, solving problems. And in this one, it's more like Lee likes her life the way her life is. She
She
thinks.
does.
She
She thinks.
thinks. Quincy says, wait, how do you know that's everything you should like? Because we haven't even tried everything yet.
Yeah.
And the tension between the two of them comes from this challenge that he kind of is like, he challenges her on everything. Like, I
And
really
she does
expected.
not know what to do with it because up until this point, she's not been challenged, right? Up until this point in her life, everything has been, "Hey, Lee, what do I do? Hey, Lee, what do I do?" And she says what to do, and then people do it. No one's ever asked her what she wants. No one's ever asked her to change course. No one's ever like challenged her. And Quincy's like, "Well, girl, come on. Let's go over here and do this thing." She's like, "We can't." It's like, "We can.
Yeah.
You might not want to, and that's a different thing, but we can.
Yeah, nobody ever asks her, they say, what's for dinner? But nobody asks her, what would you like for dinner?
Exactly.
You know,
And
it.
so a lot of their, I've been calling it a strangers to friends to lovers story, because a lot of them getting through this initial, like Lee's initial barrier, is that Quincy spends a lot of time being like, well, what do you want? And her being like, I don't know. Like, why would I know that? Why would I know what I want at 44 years old?
He
She
just
truly
keeps
has to
showing
reckon with
up.
that.
He just keeps showing up. And there's a tenacity to Quincy that makes him, he's kind of an unexpected protector in a way because he's, very smooth, very, flirty. He's, that charisma. But he's doing everything in a way that's safe for Lee. He takes her where she's at. And I think that makes a book boyfriend in a whole different sense. When you can see someone where they're at and you can say, okay, I can work with how you're at, but I might help you push your boundaries.
Or like he also is like, I see where you're at, and this is good for me. I like you the way you are. So how about we figure out what else you like, and maybe we can do more of those things together. And Lee just spends an inordinate amount of time being like, I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
I think she rolls her eyes like 75 times
Yeah,
in those.
she just has no idea what to do. And even her friends are like, well, why not? And she's like, because he's 12 years younger than me. And they're all like, so what does that mean? Nothing. It means nothing. Like, she just really, the responsibility is her biggest struggle. Like, doing what she thinks she's supposed to do versus what she wants to do. And she's never had to reconcile those two things because she's always done what she's supposed to do.
And it's funny that you call yourself kind of a documentarian, that these characters have to start living and doing their things so that you can write it down, because your books are very character driven. They're,
Yes.
we are seeing a character arc that shows us their growth and the coming together, and your books are HEAs. And as I read them, I always think, these are the characters I want. Like, this is the love, the I want to
I
see
love
this.
romance. I love romance. I just don't care about what the kitchen looks like. I really don't. So my books, if you need to know how many tiles are in the backsplash, you guys, I'm sorry, I have no idea. But I could tell you every emotion that crossed Quincy's mind when Lee said, no, you are not, I can't take you seriously.
Yeah.
You tell me everything that he felt. I could tell you how it hurt, how he got angry, how he got a little bit spiteful about it. I have no idea if there's crown molding on the walls.
I mean, and
I have
nobody
no
really
idea.
cares about crown molding. So when
Yeah.
you, the other thing that you do that's exceptional in your books, and we saw it in the Insufferable Mr. Fletcher, is this cast of characters are multicultural.
Yes.
And I really love that because you are not shying away about talking about some of the identity crisis that comes with that.
Yeah, because Lee comes from a small town, and there are lots of marginalized people who come from small towns. And I do think about this a lot, and it sounds like I'm being sarcastic, and maybe it sounds like I'm being dismissive or patronizing. I'm not. But I always think about when you live in a tiny town, and I'm talking 4,000, 5,000,
Yeah.
8,000 people, a small town, and you are different in any way. I don't even mean Black, Muslim, Asian, just different. The whole town is into baseball and you like lacrosse. The whole town is
Yeah.
into astronomy and you like electric guitar, whatever. Like, you are different in a way that stands out in a tiny town. Then all you do is stand out because everybody knows that you're different and everybody talks about how you're different and there's nowhere for you to be the way you want to be.
Yeah.
You're queer in a small town. You're the only like ethnic family in a small town. Like, it's hard to find a place when everybody else, like you feel like you're swimming against stream. So I like to bring that reality to the characters. Lee comes from that place. She comes from that existence. And now she lives in Toronto, which is a huge city in compared to where she grew up in St. Mary's, Ontario, by the way, which is a real place in Canada, just outside of Stratford. She comes to Toronto. She's made a life for herself. And that's hard, right? Like leaving your comfortable small town and then going to a huge big city where you can feel like you're swallowed whole. And she didn't. Like a city can chew you up and spit you out and send you backpacking to your tiny little town. And she survived it because she is a responsible, methodical person. Quincy did not grow up in a small town. He grew up in a suburb, but he's like, fly by the seat of my pants. What can I do? I can do whatever I want because who's to stop me? And I think when you're making a cast of characters, this is my opinion. When you're making a cast of characters, where they come from and how they became the way they are is just as important as ticking quote unquote boxes. I have a queer character. I have an Asian
Yeah.
character. I have like just as important as that is making sure that they come from somewhere grounded, right? And so me knowing that Lee comes from a small town and what that meant for her and what it means to survive in a big city all these years, that adds to who she is, right? Like
Yeah.
The same thing with Quincy. Quincy grew up in a part of the city, a neighboring city, the greater Toronto area, that is predominantly Asian. Like, so that's who he is, right? Like, those things inform the character. And I like having all of those people. Like, one of the criticisms I get is that there are too many people. But I like having all of those people because I think that it helps inform who our heroes are.
Well, it gives us a wider picture because not only does where you come from define who your character is going to be, because they have to have those experiences to know where they're starting so that we get this great character arc, right? And that we get this vulnerability and emotion that comes. And we need these backgrounds, but we also need those other cast of characters to help define and give us a snapshot of what life is like right now. Because while as much as we're defined by where we came from, we're also defined by the company and the community we work in and we keep.
100%.
And we need those. And that's, one of the things that, as I've done this, one of the things that has been, challenged and I've noticed is, making sure that you're reading all stories, right? Like that I am not just checking boxes, but that I'm consuming as much as I can of every kind of story. And I have to do it in a way that is cognizant. Like, I have to be aware that, like, hey, what are you doing? You need to make sure that you are reading Black love, that you are reading biracial love by authors, that this is their voice, queer romances by authors, that this is their voice. And I think it makes me a better reader, but it also helps me make sure that my community is inclusive, which is why your characters, that snapshot, that wider picture is important. Because I need to be able to see myself in your book too.
Well, and I enjoy populating the world with what Toronto looks like right now. We are famous for a lot of things, good and bad. But one of the things that I think Toronto gets a lot of credit for, and I think it's well deserved, is the fact that it's a very multicultural city.
Yeah.
And it is the fact that it is a very full city, like art and sport and culture and concert, and like we have all of the things. And if it's expensive, sure, but if you want to do it, you can do it here. And so, making a world where Quincy is the director of premium sales for a Major League Baseball team, and his best friend has a hair salon, and Lee has a bakery bookshop, and nobody knows if it's a bakery that sells books or a bookstore that sells cake, and her best friend started as a sex worker and then evolved her empire into lingerie. And it's fun to think because That's possible. I mean, I'm sure if you went to some burlesque show in Toronto, you'd ask the person who started, where did, like, how did
Where'd
you
you get
get here?
here?
It would be a, you know, like a wandering tale. Like, well, I started in this and I ended up here and then I did this and now I'm here and I love it. Like, I just like thinking about all the ways of how the people got to where they are.
Well, and I think you can do that in a city like Toronto. Like I think of like author Jackie Lau also writes her books in Toronto. And I always think her books do that too. They show us little snippets of the city in her purview and what it looks like for her. And I love that. Like it feels, I don't know, it feels like you're in that city in that moment.
I'm glad you think that because I do try to not in a cliche or Toronto's another character, not like that, but I want to make it real that if you ever came here and you were walking around, you'd be like, oh shit, that street actually exists. I remember her talking about that. Or, oh, that is a real place that
Yeah.
actually stands there in that thing. The way that people talk about Chicago or the way, you know, like there are certain landmarks and certain parts of the city that, you know, someone says to me Chicago, I think of like six things right off the top of my head
Right.
from books I've read. If someone says to me Atlanta, I think of like six, seven things off the top of my head because of books I've read. Houston, New York, Seattle. Have I been to those cities? Some of them, but what I know, right? Like it's because those authors made the place real. They grounded the story in a way that was real. And I'm hopeful that I can like that I can say that about my work as well.
Yeah, you also do something that I'm incredibly proud of you, that you are writing, a Canadian author, writing in Canada with Canadian characters. Because sometimes there is the pressure, oh, if I'm going to sell to a US market, I need to write in the US. And a lot of Canadian authors fall prey to that. Australian authors fall prey to that. And I love when you let us see your cities, your towns, from your eyes. Because I'm not Canadian, but I'm jealous of the Canadians. I mean, there's some of my favorite people are Canadians, but
It's you know it's interesting to me because I feel like it's not a one-way street, you know, like that mentality, like, oh, but if you want Americans to read it, then you have to base it in America. But Americans go places. They go to Spain. They go places. So surely to God, they can understand that I'm talking about another city. And for the Americans that don't go places, they also understand, like someone who lives in Florida has a completely different idea of what a day-to-day life is than someone who lives in Montana. And one's not better or worse, they're just different. So if you don't travel and you're in Montana, then a story about Florida is just as foreign to you as a story about Toronto.
Exactly. I mean, I can get to the Canadian border faster than I can get to the Ohio-Kentucky border.
Right? So
Like 90 minutes.
exactly.
Real quick, this is totally off subject and not about your books. There is an author calling the Great Lakes coastal waters. And they're not
Oh,
Canadian. And I'm like,
I mean, they're majestic, the Great Lakes, but they're great.
they're great, but
No,
nobody's calling them
not,
coastal.
no, the, I mean, words mean things. It's not a coast, like a coast on the edges. We
Right.
don't, like, we don't do that.
We're in the middle.
We're,
Anyway,
yeah.
I just had to tell you that because I was like, because as
Yeah,
a
because Toronto
US
sits
side,
right,
as a US
yeah,
side,
because Toronto sits right on Lake Ontario.
yeah.
We have a beautiful lakefront.
Lakefront.
Beautiful lakefront. I would not suggest that we are a coastal city.
Could you imagine Toronto changing their entire like marketing campaign for tourists? Come visit the coastal city of Toronto.
Oh my God. The people who already hate us would be like, you guys are up your own ass. Please stop this nonsense. Like, it would eat us alive for that. Please
You
stop.
can totally share that with all your friends and be like, guys, I got an idea.
We are now part of the coastal elite, you guys.
We have coastal homes. Anyway, so I, as an American, I keep saying it, and someone said, well, maybe the author, is, like maybe they're Canadian, and the Canadian, and I'm like, I have Canadian friends. They don't say that either.
We don't. We don't. We sure do not.
Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy how Quincy went from supportive smush face to crazy dirty talker?
Okay, so he has a mouth. Okay,
I
but
just the reason I'm asking is because I did not know that until he started doing it, and then I was like, oh, well.
well, there's a couple things about Mr. Quincy that I'm currently in love with.
Okay.
First of all, he's a big guy.
He's a big guy.
I love a big guy. He is a plus size hero, and
He
he
sure is.
owns his body and who he is, and he is sexy and he knows he's sexy. And
And
I
he's not like a little bit big. He's a lot
lot
big.
big. Yeah. And I have a big guy for a husband, and I love it. I love the big guys. And yes, hello, Quincy. I loved
I love
him for
Quincy.
that. And then okay, so he's super swoony, and his
Yes.
flirt game is like 10 out of 10. But then, first of all, this is a slow burn. And I
Yes.
swear you do
Because
this
they had
on.
to get there. They had to get there.
They had to get there, and they are strangers to lovers with a friendship mixed in. But sometimes I think, Lindo, that you write this and you think, okay, how can I torture Becky? Because I know that I'm in your brain when you're writing. You're like,
100%, 100%.
how can I torture Becky? Let me give her a really slow burn. And then Quincy starts giving us these little nibbles of who he is. And then he just goes. And I'm like, well, hello, Daddy. Where did that come from?
He I guess wants Lee to know that nothing is off the table. If you
Yeah.
want it, I got it.
He was phenomenal. He's so swoony. I just loved him. Like, he just was this all around. And while Lee is definitely the star of this book, she is the star. He grows too, though. Like, he realizes that her saying no wasn't this personal attack. She just didn't know how to say yes.
And someone like Quincy, who has, on the strength of his considerable charm, gotten just about everything that he's ever had before, having to work for it, it's good. Like, he needs to be humbled. Like, it was good for him to work for it a little bit.
He did. He needed to work for it. Okay, so there's no third act breakup in this book. So for all of my listeners that are don't want the third act breakup, there isn't a third act breakup, but we do have some emotion. And
There's some emotions.
I don't want to say it was a dark moment, because it wasn't a dark moment, but some realizations and some real talks. And that's something else that you do really well. They talked like grown-ups.
Yeah. I felt like this story didn't require it, and I am indifferent on the third act breakup. If
Yeah.
it's necessary, then it's necessary. Junior and Davis had to have it because he needed to put his foot down. She needed something. She needed to see that there was something to lose, and he needed to stand up for himself. So they had to. These two, that's not their problem. Their problem is Lee getting out of her own way and Quincy giving her the space to do that. So they don't need a third act breakup. They need to look each other in the eye and say their words, which is what they did.
Which is what they did. We also didn't talk about Lee as a single mom. And
Yes.
she has a grown son. Like, he's not a little kid.
No, and that's part of the thing. Like, people, 12 years might not seem like a lot, but if he's 12 years younger and only 5 years older than your adult son, then it becomes a little bit of a responsible firstborn daughter, pressure, pressure, pressure. She's not going to look at that lightly. And that was a lot of her hang-up. She's like, he is closer to my son's age than he is my age. He could be friends with my boy, and who am I dating one of my son's friends? What kind of cliche am I?
Right.
And all of her friends are like, yeah, but he's not friends with your son. He's not the same age as your son. You are not his mother, so who cares? If you want to, then go for it. She struggled with that a lot.
Okay, so I noticed on your Instagram, I think you put it up today. You might have put it up yesterday, but yesterday was not a social media day. Today I did scroll social media. You put up a graphic about how all your books, your two books right now, have a man named Kyle.
Yes. Well, so there's two books, a short story and a holiday novella that exist in the world.
Okay.
And all four have a man named Kyle.
Are they all the same, Kyle?
Well, they're all inspired by the same Kyle, but they are different Kyle.
Do you owe Kyle
So
money and you got to
in
put him in the book? Is that what this is?
yeah, that's what it is. No. So in this book, Kyle is a friend from Leeds town. Like they grew up together in St. Mary's and they run into each other at a house party. In the first book, Kyle was the sales associate at the sporting goods store. In the short story, Kyle is he's a date that like absconds with one of the bridal party. They're at a wedding and one of the bridal parties like leaving with this guy named Kyle. And in the holiday novella, Kyle is a laborer who's trying to get his job done as one of the neighbor ladies berates him for something that's not his fault. So there's always, even if it's just in passing, there's always a character named Kyle. It's my cousin's husband, and he thinks the fact that I write romance is both phenomenal and like it makes him blush furiously. So I
You
have to put
have to.
him, then I have to.
It's like the
So that's what it
rules.
is.
It's like the rules.
Right?
Okay, so The Insufferable Mr. Fletcher is out now. Like, you guys can go grab that right now. And then The Indomitable Mr. Temple is coming out on August 30th. So I think we're dropping this episode Thursday. So people, when they get Friday morning, when they get on their podcast app on the way to work, they can listen and go out and grab that copy. So the insufferable Mr. Fletcher had the nickname Dick Face.
Yes.
What was the nickname?
The working title for this was Peaches.
Was Peaches. Which that makes sense. It makes sense. I'm not giving anything away. Okay,
But it was
so
Peaches.
I'm going to ask this, but you might not even know. So we have these two books. What's next?
Claudia's story is next. So we meet Claudia in book one, and she's mentioned in book two. And she plays a little bit of a part in book two with, getting some recon. The sidebar, this is another part where Lee and the fact that she grew up so quickly because she was a teen mom does not relate to her friends who had like a traditional sort of growth thing. Social media stalking is not something that she does. And all her friends were like, no, let this is recon 101. Like, we're going to go through his socials and we're going to figure some stuff out. And once they do, Junior's cousin Claudia comes in with the details because she recognizes one of the guys in the picture. So we are going to go figure out Claudia and the guy that gave her the dirt, how what their relationship is.
Oh, okay.
And so that one is a sort of subverted grumpy sunshine. Claudia has a bubbly, sunshiny personality, but underneath it, she is riddled with anxiety and basically just hates people. And Ian,
Relatable.
who's our hero, right? You get it.
Yes.
Ian, who is our hero, he has like a Doberman face, like a very, grr face, but he is just a ball of sunshine. And she thinks that because he has a Doberman face, that they will get along because underneath she's a Doberman. And then when they get closer and she's like, oh, I've been bamboozled. You are not a Doberman.
Oh no. She's gonna be sassy.
She is. And she's going to be a little bit bossy in bed, our Claudia.
I'm okay. I'm here for it. I love it all.
She's going to be a little bit bossy in bed. And he is going to say, that's fine. More please.
Thank
That's
you.
Ian's answer.
He's gonna say thank you. She's gonna say you're
Thank you.
welcome.
More please.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
I love this. I'm so excited for this. Okay, everybody, make sure you run out and grab The Insufferable Mr. Fletcher and The Indomitable Mr. Temple, by Lindo Forbes. They're available wherever you get books, you guys. So make sure you check those out. Lindo, thanks for coming and hanging out with me.
Thanks for having me, Becky. It's always so much fun.
I always love chatting with you. Until next time, everybody, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.